you bribe the right politicians in the right order at the right time, you can trade the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil. Politicians in the right order at the right time, you can train the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil. Politicians in the right order at the right time, you can train the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil.
Your organs are failing and your death is drawing near. But if
you bribe the right politicians in the right order at the right time. You can trade the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil.
The allocation scandal. 55 million people die annually. The National Institutes of Health has an annual budget of approximately $47 billion. You would think those two facts would be related. They are not. Of $247 billion the NIH spent over a decade, exactly 3.3% went to testing whether treatments actually work in humans. The other 96.7% went to everything else. That might be defensible if we'd already tested all the known safe compounds that are piled up waiting for human testing. We haven't. There are roughly 9,500 compounds with established safety profiles, and 99.7% of their possible disease applications have never been tested. The pipeline is overflowing with candidates. The bottleneck is trials. It's like spending 96.7% of your grocery budget on cookbooks and 3.3% on food, then wondering why you're starving. This isn't just inefficiency, it's a body count. A JAMA study broke down $247.3 billion in NIH spending, 10-year 2010 to 2019. Each of these categories funds valuable work. The question is whether the ratio makes sense when thousands of safe compounds sit untested. 84.9% of the budget, or $209.9 billion, went to basic research like understanding disease mechanisms, molecular biology, and genomics. This is essential for identifying new targets, but 85 cents of every dollar is a lot of understanding and not much testing. 11.8%, totaling $29.3 billion, was spent on non-trial applied research, which translates discoveries toward practical use without the final step of testing them in patients. The Clinical and Translational Science Awards, or CTSA, infrastructure program uses about $1 billion per year for trial infrastructure, coordination, and training. Observational studies for population health data collection, such as the All of Us program at $2.16 billion, are valuable for identifying patterns, but observation without intervention doesn't cure anyone. Other applied research includes drug characterization, health services research, and epidemiology. Only 3.3%, or $8.1 billion, went to phased clinical trials, which is the only category that directly tests whether treatments work in humans, phases 1 to 3. Phase 1 received $1.5 billion, or 18.5% of the clinical trial budget. Phase 2 received $3.5 billion, or 43.2%. Phase 3 received $2.6 billion, or 32.1%, While the NIH covers only 3.7 to 4.3% of Phase 3 costs, leaving completion to industry, which only funds trials with patent-protected profit potential. About $500 million, or 6.2%, went to other unclassified costs for cross-phase overhead, pilot studies, and trials not classified to a single phase. Pragmatic trials, which can be 30 times cheaper, remain severely underfunded despite proven efficiency. Why this allocation exists? This isn't bureaucratic accident, it's lobbied outcome. Drug companies love the NIH. Taxpayers absorb the risk of basic research. Industry patents whatever works. It's like if your neighbor paid for your kitchen renovation and then you charged them rent to eat there.
But independent trials comparing drugs head-to-head? Those are terrifying. They might reveal that the $80,000 drug works about as well as the $4 generic. Pharma, the pharmaceutical lobby, has consistently opposed comparative effectiveness research. When Congress created the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Initiative, or PCORI, in 2010, industry successfully lobbied to prohibit it from making coverage recommendations based on cost-effectiveness. Congress literally passed a law saying, don't fund research that might lower drug prices. They wrote it down, in legislation, on purpose. The revolving door helps. NIH advisory committees include industry representatives. Former NIH officials join pharmaceutical boards. Academic researchers depend on industry grants. Everyone's incentives align against cheap, fast trials testing whether expensive drugs outperform generics. It's not a conspiracy. It's just that everyone involved happens to benefit from the same terrible outcome, purely by coincidence, repeatedly, for decades. Basic research produces publications. Publications produce tenure. Tenure produces more grants. Nobody in this cycle needs anyone to get better. They need papers. The 3.3% allocation isn't a mystery. It's a business model. The efficiency gap, a tale of two trials. The difference between efficient and inefficient trial design isn't theoretical. Humanity accidentally ran a controlled experiment on itself during COVID. Two countries, same disease, one spent like it was trying to cure death. The other actually did. Recovery Initiative, NIH approach. Budget, $1.665 billion. $1.15 billion plus $515 million in 2024. Source. Timeline, 4 years and counting. Patients enrolled, approximately 30,000. Trials completed, zero. Cost per patient, $55,500. Recovery trial, UK approach. Budget, $20 million. Timeline, 6 months. Patients enrolled, 48,000. Treatments found, multiple, including dexamethasone, saved over 1 million lives. Cost per patient, $500. The NIH spent 111 times more per patient and achieved infinitely less. Dividing by zero trials completed produces infinity, which is fitting because that's how long patients waited. This efficiency gap is not unique to recovery. A systematic review of 64 pragmatic trials found a median cost of $97 per patient. The British cured disease for the price of a nice dinner per patient. America spent the price of a luxury SUV per patient and cured nothing. The problem isn't that curing disease is hard. The NIH doesn't have a capability problem. It has a shopping addiction. The death toll, opportunity cost of misallocation. When you misallocate the vast majority of a $47 billion annual budget into low-efficiency research instead of high-efficiency clinical trials, you aren't just wasting money, you are composting people. Cost per QAL, Quality Adjusted Life Year. Standard NIH portfolio, $50,000 per QAL at standard medical research ROI, and that's being generous. Pragmatic platform trials, $4 per QAL.
Every $1 spent on efficient, pragmatic trials buys 12,500 times more health than the dollar spent on the current NIH portfolio. The adaptable trial proved pragmatic trials cost 30 times less than traditional RCTs, $14 million versus $420 million. Same science, fewer catered meetings. The death equivalent of budget misallocation. The annual opportunity cost is approximately 100 million quality-adjusted life years, or QALYs, and about 7 million death equivalents per year. Even the most conservative estimate is approximately 10 million QALYs and 700,000 preventable deaths annually. For every dollar spent on pragmatic trials producing QALYs, the NIH spends $12,500 to achieve the same result. You are operating at 0.008% of your potential capacity to save lives. If your car ran at 0.008% efficiency, it would move 1 inch per gallon. If your heart pumped at 0.008% efficiency, you'd be dead before finishing the sentence. Your medical research system runs at 0.008% efficiency, and you gave it a raise. The translation crisis. All theory, no medicine. The problem is not a shortage of ideas, it is a shortage of anyone bothering to test them. There are over 20,000 FDA-approved drugs known to be safe in humans. There are between 4,700 and 6,800 repurposable compounds, which are clinically tested candidates, including 3,422 marketed drugs, gathering dust. There are hundreds of plausible dementia interventions. The number of clinical trials available for your grandma in St. Louis is zero. You have a warehouse of safe molecules that have never been systematically tested for new uses. The warehouse is full, the testing facility is closed for a team-building retreat. The NIH is, by its own metrics, a publishing house that occasionally dabbles in medicine. 2.5 million NIH-funded papers are published annually. About 50 new treatments are approved annually. The conversion rate from paper to patient is 0.002%. For every 50,000 papers, one drug reaches a human. The rest becomes citations in other papers, which become citations in other papers, in an infinite loop of academics reading each other's homework. Plenty of knowledge, no translation. About 5% of patients have participated in trials. About 50% of patients are willing to participate if invited. Only 9 to 11% of patients are actually invited. Half of all patients would join a clinical trial if asked. Almost nobody asks. It's like having a room full of volunteers and a clipboard and choosing to study the clipboard. Understanding disease and curing disease are completely different activities. One requires microscopes, the other requires giving people medicine and seeing if they stop dying. The NIH chose microscopes. The public goods versus club goods scam. The NIH claims to produce public goods, like open science and training. What it actually produces is a free R&D department for pharmaceutical companies funded by the same people who then pay full price for the drugs. Taxpayers-funded research behind 99% of new drugs, 356 drugs, 2010 to 2019, industry patents the winners. The public pays again through high drug prices. When research leads to a dead end, the public eats the loss. You pay for the lottery ticket, they cash the winnings. The only things the NIH should fund are things private companies cannot profitably fund. Open pragmatic trial platforms, 30 times cheaper than traditional trials, yet receive minimal NIH funding. Repurposing generic drugs, more than 4,700 clinically tested compounds where no patent equals no profit equals no interest. Comparative effectiveness data, head-to-head trials revealing which drugs actually work best, pharma's nightmare. These are the only things the NIH should be funding. Instead, the NIH explicitly avoids them to not crowd out industry. Translation, we won't run the trials that would lower drug prices because the people who set drug prices asked us nicely.
the patient disconnect. Zero correlation with health outcomes. Correlation between NIH funding priorities and actual disease burden, 0.07. That is not a typo. On a scale of 0, random, to 1, perfect, the NIH scores basically a coin flip. A dartboard would allocate research funding more rationally. What patients want? Medicine that works. Access to experimental therapies. Trials they can join. A cure before they die. What NIH funds? Molecular mechanisms, papers in prestigious journals, research empires, institutional overhead. Patients don't control the money. Committees do. And committees optimize for the continued existence of committees. This is true of all committees everywhere since the invention of committees. Nobody has ever convened a committee that recommended fewer committees. The track record. Since 1970, the NIH has spent over $1.1 trillion, inflation adjusted. Diseases eradicated? Zero. This isn't because eradicating disease is impossible. The WHO eradicated smallpox for $300 million. Jonas Salk developed the polio vaccine in a university lab and gave it away for free, which is why nobody at the NIH talks about him at parties. Veterinarians have eradicated multiple animal diseases, while the NIH was forming subcommittees about forming subcommittees. Cows have better healthcare outcomes than you do. What would actually work? The UK recovery trial already proved it. $500 per patient instead of $41,000. First life-saving result in under 100 days. Over 1 million lives saved. The blueprint exists. It is not theoretical. It happened in England during a pandemic while Americans were arguing about horse dewormer. The recipe. 1. Pay for results. Treatment equals payment. No treatment equals no payment. Radical, I know. 2. Publish everything, including failures, especially failures. 3. Eliminate gatekeepers. Let patients vote with participation. 4. Automate administration. Smart contracts instead of committees. Committees cannot be trusted. See above.
Thank you so much for taking the time to end war and disease. But if at any point you decide you're too busy, please share this with a friend who's got a free afternoon and have them end war and disease instead. And if you're too busy to even do that, please leave a really good rating and review. It doesn't have to be true, they don't check. So we overcome the pro-war algorithmic suppression and find someone with more spare time for ending wars and diseases. But if you're too busy to even do that, the absolute least you could do is take 15 seconds to go to warondisease.org and tell us what fraction of humanity's resources should go to explosions versus clinical trials, and vote on the 1% treaty. If the treaty passes, your vote will be personally to blame for saving 38.4 lives, 95% CI, 20.6 lives to 77.6 lives, and preventing 6.90 million hours, 95% CI, 4.01 million hours to 12.2 million hours, of suffering. Go to warondisease.org right now. Love you. Bye.